Hello, wrestling fans. This is the one and only Nick Lopez. Well, I'm sure there's lots of Nick Lopez's on this planet, but this one is the only owner, editor-in-chief of ProWrestlingOpinion.com, giving you exclusive in-depth coverage of various wrestling companies from the mainstream, like WWE, TNA, ROH. We also cover the little guys, like West Coast Wrestling Connection, AML Wrestling Live. We've done interviews as well with past stars like Dirty Jake Durden from Dynamo Pro Wrestling. We got it all on the site. Check it out. And I also want to just take the opening minutes here just to address our adoring fans of the RSN Wrestling Podcast. You know, we do thank you for tuning in each and every time. As far as me and the site, a few outside commitments with another job that I have and family, you know, they've kind of taken me away from the site a little bit. So I'm a little bit behind on live coverage, but I'm working my way back. And just like Rocky Balboa, I'm gonna win it in the last round. I don't know. Actually, I haven't seen Rocky, so I'm jumping ahead of myself here. But you know the end of the story. He ends up winning. I'm gonna end up winning. We'll get right back onto that live coverage that you also undoubtedly deserve. But just enjoy the ride. And in case you are wondering what I am thinking of Raws and SmackDowns from a month ago, do feel free to check out the site. And in case you are already on the site, I do have stuff up on there from the entire calendar year 2015. Every Raw, every SmackDown, every Impact, every Lucha Underground, every pay-per-view. Anything you could think of. I have stuff from the 80s, 90s. There's a whole catalog of wrestling just waiting to be read. And as time goes on, we're going to be adding a lot more to the site. That'll be in due time. But come with me, enjoy the ride, and just chronicle my journey as I come and catch up. And it should be a fun ride, and I'm going to throw it to my other co-host here, Big Guy Rich and Mastermind Cell. And again, this is Nick. They call me the COO, but you know, I don't really feel like a COO. You know, I don't
well, what, well, what do you want to be name, called?
I'll take it any way it comes.
Well, what do you want to be called instead? We had another name, I think, too, the executive, by the way, right? I don't know if that suits you.
I mean, it's like executive.
The executive. Well, I mean, for now, you're still the COO. But
I'm COO.
You're immortalized as the COO now, but it's going to be hard to transition. It's just like a wrestling name where you have one character and you're trying to diverge into another character. It's kind of hard because people will say, okay, is that him or is that him? And then there's confusion, you know? But nonetheless, I mean...
Pretty much. And...
Either way, yeah, we still know you as the COO, the main guy for PWO, Pro Wrestling Opinion.
And you did say a funny word there, transitions.
Yes.
Transitions. One particular wrestling company has undergone a lot of transitions over the years. How many years? 14?
Just about 14 years, maybe more.
I'm just thinking of one company, you know, they're called the Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. It goes by the letters, more commonly known as TNA. And what lucky guest we have today, because that's going to be our next topic for the next hour or so, where we're going to explore the highs, the many lows, and the slow uprising of TNA again, as they've come to find themselves within the last few years. They've had an array of talent come through their company. They've gone on to other places. And at the same time, they've never really lost their footing in terms of building stars and keeping them that way. They've gotten better over as the years have gone on. But again, I do think you know, TNA does have a ridiculously long history. And as much as they are arguably maybe the internet laughingstock of pro wrestling, you have to give credit where credit is due. And TNA kind of deserves some because they've single-handedly built guys in order for them to excel in other wrestling companies. Now that's just me. I don't know about you guys, but I'll give you guys the floor there.
Well, Rich, What do you think about TNA as a whole? Before we start talking about the history and all that, let's talk about first, you know, like Nick was talking about, you know, his thoughts on TNA. I want to hear what your thoughts are, you know, on TNA. What do you really think? Because I know for a while, we used to come here on the podcast and say, fuck TNA. And then after a while, it subsided.
But you also have to think, we said that when it was also in the downfall part. Because remember, we've been doing this for over a year.
Yep.
And about a year ago, it wasn't as good as it was now. Or way back in the day, when they had the big stars as AJ, Joe, Rude, Storm, Daniels, Kazarian, Sabin. It wasn't as good last year as it was back in the early 2000s. But now, after a lot of the guys left, it had a little downfall, but then it picked back up. Now it's like a great company with Broken Matt Hardy, Brother Nero, even Crazy Steve is a good character right now. They have multiple guys from other companies like the Miracle Mike Bennett, Moose. Then they have people from WWE and Ethan Carter, Lashley.
Galloway.
Drew Galloway. Thank you. I just drew a blank for a second.
I think it's because
but it's really good, though. I actually like TNA in the state of matter it's in now.
True. I mean, well, for me, I mean, I agree with both of you. I think it had its ups and downs, but overall, it's a revolutionary company. I mean, as a wrestling fan, we don't want to be stuck watching one program. So, for example, that's like with WWE. If we're stuck watching WWE for a while, you kind of get bored. You're like, you know, what else is there to watch on TV? So you kind of just...
Because you got to admit, with WWE, before Shane came back, the first 40 minutes of Raw was always talking.
And it was annoying. I mean, just keep seeing the same kind of format that they have with the same kind of style. Over the years, it kind of gets boring, you know? But, I mean, nonetheless, it's still... I mean, over the years, they've really improved. It's always what I've noticed is there's a trend. They always want to be different from WWE.
Oh, and another thing that TNA does, which is great, they actually give the knockouts a big part of the show too.
Well, for a period, I mean, before we delve into it, but it was there was a period where they actually gave the spotlight to women's wrestling, the knockouts, aka. But I mean, yeah, that's what I was kind of saying, that no matter where you are, if you're an old star, a new star, wherever you've been, you come to TNA, it's always something different. And I think for fans, it's something different, too. But overall, I mean, I agree with you guys. It has its up and downs. We'll just have to see what happens from here.
But that's every company, though.
Yeah.
Every company has its uprise, then it has a slight downfall, then it kind of picks back up a little bit.
I mean, yeah, you could check that. By the way, you're talking about the rises and falls of different companies. We've also done one for WCW, the one for ECW. You can check that out also on our YouTube page. But
I think you also check that out somewhere else. Sal, what's the name of that site?
You're talking about a three-letter site, right?
Yeah, I just can't. It's like on the tip of my tongue. I can't remember it. Can you refresh my memory?
Well, we got the CEO on the other line, so you know.
I think it's ProWrestlingOpinion.com.
Yeah, ProWrestlingOpinion.com. I think that's what it is, right? ProWrestlingOpinion.
Nick, what's the name of that site where you could read about old shows?
Oh, yeah, it's called...
I can't remember the name of it.
It's ProWrestlingOpinion.com.
Oh, my God, Sal, we have a celebrity on the show.
I know,
it's the creator of the website.
I know, that's what I'm saying. We always got him right here, PWR exclusive right here, you know?
But, Sal, isn't it that time again?
What time?
I think it's tagline time.
Oh yeah, I think I know. Well, it's your line, so you know you're the one to say it.
In the words of Nick from when we first started, reading is fundamental. Reading about wrestling is everything.
Indeed, Nick.
And that's RSN tagline time.
Nick, well, Nick, I think you should copyright that because that's a legit tagline, you know.
Get it before WWE gets it.
Or get it before Rich gets it.
I think I might modify it a little bit. I think reading is fundamental. Reading about wrestling puts you over.
New tagline right there, Nick.
I like it.
Tagline.
I like that.
I will be getting in touch with the proper authorities and making sure that goes into proper formation.
You heard that here, folks. That's the new tagline right here, and that's basically our motto here, too.
Refer it up to Congress.
Yep. But nonetheless, let's delve into TNA. That's what this podcast is about. So basically for the next, I'd say, next 45 minutes, next hour, we'll be talking about TNA. So before we talk about TNA, we have this thing that we do with any company, whether it's ECW, WCW, we talk about the history, and then we delve into the different things. So, with TNA, it started in, I believe, Nashville, Tennessee, in 2002, I believe.
Something like that, early 2000s.
Yeah. Early 2000s. Well, I heard that it started before. I think when WCW went out of business, right then and there, they had this idea of TNA. Because if you want to go even more back, think about this. It's the invasion. The first night where it's a simulcast, Vince appears on TV. He says, I bought WCW, I clenched his throat, and I took everything out of it. I squeezed the life out of it. And then what happens? There's a segment. I don't know if you guys remember this. He has both monitors on the screen. One says WCW, one says WWF. And then he goes ahead and then he looks in the screen and says, oh, look at that. So we got WWF on one side, WCW on the other side. Oh, look, that's Jeff Jarrett. Well, I want to tell you guys something. And he looks in the camera and he says, you're double G, double O, N, E, gone. And then what happens? Jeff Jarrett says, you know what? Fuck you, Vince. I'm going to make my own company. And then he breaks off and makes TNA. What do you guys feel about that? You remember that, right?
Well, if you remember, he also started another company that didn't do very well, but it picked up. It's just a habit, I guess. Whatever company Jeff Jarrett tries to do, downfall, and then gets better when he's not in charge. Global Force Wrestling.
The ironic thing is, though, that like now TNA is flourishing on its own, but Jarrett's not really a part of that picture. But again, I will say it did take some time for them to figure out, you know, what exactly they had, but as far as like TNA's early days, it's funny because it was pretty much at an awkward time in wrestling when everyone who was everyone pretty much was in WWE, but everyone who wasn't lucky enough to get there, they were just kind of stuck waiting around, not sure what to do with themselves, and they all just kind of banded together. And we saw this little company, you know, come about. They used to put together these weekly pay-per-views. My brother, you know, he used to watch some of them as they came around. And, you know, there were actually some pretty cool things going on there. I mean, you had the Flying Elvises. You had the New Church. You had some cool things happening. Undoubtedly, I'd say TNA's early years probably dedicated to the Asylum, arguably. Their biggest calling, their biggest newsworthy event was the AJ Styles-Jerry Lynn feud. Now, that was pretty valuable because it kept Lynn's name relevant, and it also you pretty much gave birth to what AJ Styles would eventually become down the road. But just seeing those matches and seeing how great their chemistry was, it really did put TNA on the map early on. And I think if they didn't have that, it would have taken them a lot longer to get noticed.
That was actually a very nice name drop of Jerry Lynn.
Well, I mean, Jerry Lynn, he's a legendary name. He's worked in WCW, he's worked in ECW, and like you said,
everyone knows him for his most famous feud with Rob Van Dam, though.
Oh yeah, undoubtedly. But
that was phenomenal.
Yeah, his feud with Styles. I mean, that was everything back then in like 2002. Like basically, he was finishing up his feud with RVD around the time he started it with AJ Styles. So it's just like, oh wow, he's going from one guy to another. But this is actually really cool because AJ Styles could fly and do all these crazy things that maybe RVD couldn't do. and, you know, maybe RVD's losing his touch a little bit, but look at this young talent, you know, he's really making a name for himself.
It's true. I mean, with that, it brought up new stars like AJ Styles. Also from that era, there was also people like Ron the Truth Killings, known right now as R-Truth.
Yes.
Oh my God, when he came in, he revolutionized, like, the way that people saw him. I mean, I think he was probably one of those guys that...
If you remember, he actually started in WWE as K-Quick.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I mean, he came from WWF also, so I think that's where it started, too. They brought in this WWF star that WWE didn't think, okay, this guy didn't have any talent. And then they brought him in and made him into a big star. And later on in that, you saw that over and over, where they brought in failed stars, made him into big stars. But with Ron, I think it was very special with him, because you gotta understand, he was the first first NWA champ. Because if you remember that time, they didn't have their own TNA title; they were in conjunction with NWA. But nonetheless, he was, I think, and on the mic, he was pretty good too. I mean, you gotta understand, there were many segments that he did, and he was a great talker. Whether it was with Ricky Steamboat shooting on WWE. Whether it was with Dusty Rhodes backstage doing, you know, like a random heel shoot. He was a great heel, though, and that's what I think what really made him shine. TNA at that time gave people that felt limited or felt like they didn't have a chance. Like, they basically gave them a new light of, okay, this is your opportunity, let's see what you can do. And I think R-Truth is one of those guys. I mean,
like, this is also shooting into the future, but look with Bully Ray and TNA. WWE and ECW, they gave him the mic very good. Mm-hmm. WWF, they didn't give him nothing. They gave him, like, the whole stuttering thing. He goes to TNA, and look at the promos he was cutting there. His promos were amazing in TNA.
I mean, that's the thing with...
just skipped over a whole bunch of time, but because you were talking about promos, that's why I brought that up.
Yeah, we're gonna get to that soon, but I mean, let's look back even more. They got Samoa Joe there. They got Austin Aries for a little bit. Who else in that time? They had I don't know if you guys remember Sonny Siaki.
Yeah.
They had Sanjay Dutt.
Sanjay Dutt was also pretty good. And
Kid Cash. Another ECW name.
Mm-hmm. They also had their own talent too. I mean,
they had the homegrown talent, which everyone loves.
Yep. James Storm was also getting a start there. Chris Harris was getting a start.
Abyss.
Team Canada,
Eric EY. Young. EY. Eric D'Amore. Michael D'Amore, my bad.
Scott D'Amore.
Yeah, Scott D'Amore. Why am I saying Michael D'Amore? Damn, I'm bugging. But yeah, I mean, that was actually the starting of those new talents. They got, I mean, Gail Kim, women's wrestling too. You know, women's talents came in over. Gail Kim came through.
Kurt Angle came.
Later on, I mean, you know.
Later on.
Yeah.
Not much later, because remember, he was the first TNA champ.
Well,
the
actual
TNA title.
Well, I mean, so we had the NWA years, and then for a little bit, they transitioned into their own era. This is where they started having their own belts. They started having, they started having their own programming, and they were pretty much exclusive. They were expanding more. Because if you got to think about that time, they had they had their own program on Spike. They had a deal with them. And it was only for an hour, but now it's for 2 hours. So now they're going prime time 2 hours every, I think it was Thursday night. And that was a pretty big deal for them, because that gave them more hope of, okay, this could be something big. And, of course, they unveiled their own TNA world title. They unveiled the TNA tag belts. They unveiled the TNA women's title, too. And those are three titles that, you know, made it there. But talk to me, you know, I want you guys to talk to me about the 2006-2007 period from that transition. From, now we're going to probably the Asylum years, I guess, right? Because this is like from 2006-2008, I guess, right?
Well, the Asylum years were actually early on in their run, like 2002 to maybe like 2003, 2004. Don't forget, they started taking on the Impact Zone. Around 2004-ish, that's when Impact started airing on television. Now, early on in its run, it aired for an hour at 3 p.m. on Fox Sportsnet. and you know, it was a quick hitting hour. You know, it gave us some decent stuff, and I kind of did like the idea that the Fox Sports ticker at the top of the screen would tell you like who was fighting, the time left in the match. You know, little things like that made it feel like more like a sports program than, let's just say, like a wrestling soap opera. But I couldn't help but feel like the product at that time was not really in a good place. I mean, people were kind of tired of Jeff Jarrett, like, dominating the main event scene. This was, like, everything about WCW that people hated. Once he stepped out of the spotlight, it started feeling a little bit better. But I do think TNA around this time were still in the process of finding themselves, but you couldn't help but still compare them to WWE because it was maybe the closest thing to it. Now, in 2004, if you'll recall, they started to take away the weekly pay-per-views, and now just like WWE, they were going to do their own monthly pay-per-views. You know, 3 hours every month. And with this kind of format, they started to really gel and find stuff. But it's funny because TNA, it goes through periods of hit or miss. Like, you know, when the company is actually really good, the storylines are fantastic. That pay-per-view really reflects that. But when the storylines are terrible and it feels like it just goes on for months at a time, you know, the pay-per-views also reflect that. So it's just interesting, you know, seeing how things kind of maybe fell apart for TNA once their deal with Fox Sports expired May 2005. And they were kind of left without any way to air Impact, so they did it online. So I think it kind of worked out that they managed to get on the same network that once aired Raw, you know, Spike TV, which is still arguably probably where they got their biggest numbers viewer-wise, because a lot of people get that channel. And I think they were really, you know, they were able to take advantage of that platform. But I do think there were some moments there where they could have, you know, held back a little bit instead of doing way too much and losing fan interest. But I mean, you could see signs of the company were growing. You know, they were getting on Spike TV. Impact was doing good enough where it went from 1 hour to 2 hours. You had a pretty stable main event scene. You had Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles. Monty Brown was building himself up. And you had, like, the homegrown talent. You know, America's Most Wanted was growing up in there. You know, Bobby Roode was coming into his own as, you know.
The Motor City Machine Guns.
Yeah, I mean, you had Team 3D. They had a pretty stable roster. But I do think we should lead into the next transition, which would be arguably the Knockouts division, which came to be one of the company's early highlights. And what people try to say, women's wrestling, oh, that was started last year with the Divas Revolution and blah, 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 blah. But who are you kidding? I mean, the Knockouts division in its early inception was the true birth of women's wrestling. And the Gail Kim, Awesome Kong feud, that really put TNA on the map, even more than Jerry Lynn and AJ Styles did. I mean, people were tuning in just to see these two ladies go at it. They were having some clinks, let me tell you.
They
main evented an Impact once with a steel cage match. They had a hardcore match. I think they had a ladder match too. And none of these every one of these matches were just so brilliantly done. And, you know, last year, you know, they tried to recreate like the whole Kong and Kim, you know, dynamic, but it just didn't have the energy that you had back in like 2007 and 2008. And it wasn't only just them. You had other Knockouts too, like the Beautiful People in its early inception was really good.
All of them, all 15 members of them.
You had Roxy. I mean, there was even at one point talks of the Knockouts getting their own television show in addition to Impact. I mean, that was probably when TNA was pulling in some big numbers. They were doing like 1.2s. 1.3s in the ratings, which weren't bad compared to like what ECW is. ECW is around those same numbers. So the fact that they were going to look at ECW as like competition, you know, really, you could see the company was having a lot of momentum, but then they went ahead and shot a little bit too far ahead. But I just want to get your guys' opinion on the importance of the knockouts and maybe what you thought of Impact Wrestling, you know, the television show, you know, early on in these years. Because he had some really good stuff going on.
Well, like what you said about them trying to get their own weekly show, TNA now started with a monthly pay-per-view just for them, the one night only Knockouts. So if that doesn't mean nothing to wrestling fans about women's wrestling, that they get their own pay-per-view, then I don't know what a wrestling fan thinks of women wrestling then. Because I think that's amazing that a company is given 2 to 3 hours of just women's wrestling.
Well, I mean, with TNA, here's the thing. With they recently unveiled the women's title at, I think, 2007, and that was kind of like the turning point, because it was like, okay, now TNA has a women's division? Holy shit. And the people that were they were bringing in, like you guys said, they had Roxy Laveau, they had, who else? They had Chrissy Hemme, Gail Kim, Mickey James.
Maria came later, sorry.
Mickey James came in, Victoria, what you call it?
Tara.
Yeah, Tara, or Victoria from WWE. They had, you know, they have all these stars, and it was kind of...
Brooke Testmacher.
Yep, Awesome Kong, who was phenomenal. They had Raka Khan. I don't know if you guys remember her.
Sarita. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with these people, it was kind of like... TNA was actually kind of the first company to say, okay, let's give these women a chance. Because if you got to look at WWE at that same time...
So they started the hashtag Give Divas a Chance.
They originated. That's where it originated from. Because if you really think about it, why would the people say, okay, give Divas a chance? Like, what would make them watch it? TNA. I would say TNA gave them the motivation for that. Because if you see TNA, like, if you see TNA at that time, they were putting really good women in wrestling. And then when you see WWE, it's kind of like, because as a casual wrestling fan, I think you guys do this, I do this, I think every fan does this. We watch what WWE's doing, and then we compare it to other companies. And then if we look at other companies and say, okay, holy shit, like, they're doing something really good. So why isn't WWE doing this? And we kind of wonder, we kind of complain, like, okay, why aren't they doing this? Because if you look at that time, women's wrestling, what were they really doing? They were doing what? The Diva Search, they were eye candy, having two-minute matches, you know, being jokes and all this stuff. Like, I mean, that's, you know, like, that's just the old man's mentality of what women can do in wrestling. Now it's different now. Now it's like, okay, now they're equal. Now there's something different. But it's the same kind of deal. Back then, I think they were the first to do that. To your point, I mean, with that women's title coming in, it kind of brought in a lot of prestige. Because you had, because if you look at that long line of history from when it started to, I believe, I said not even a year in, look at how many champions they had. They had ODB, I believe, as champ. They had, who else?
Velvet Sky
as champ.
Love.
Mm-hmm. And that whole gimmick was... The Beautiful People was crazy, though. That was a really good faction, I think, in the women's division. And then, I mean, of course, you know, the women's... I think it all started with that women's title being brought in. Because if you look at the Asylum years, did they have a women's title?
No.
Not really, right? But now, with this, they kind of put their stamp saying, okay, we have a women's title, this is our stamp and on the wrestling business. And it's pretty interesting that they did this, because later on, you really saw that. But... So we talked about pretty much Asylum, and then what, 2008. So after 2008, they started going in HD. So this is, I think, TNA Impact HD, and then what was it? They had all this stuff.
Hogan took over.
No, this is before Hogan, pre Hogan. This is
I think I could lead the next topic.
You were talking about Hogan, right, Rich?
Yeah.
Wasn't there a time where Jeff Jarrett and Hogan had a program in TNA? Or they were about to, supposedly.
I think they were going to, but it failed. It didn't pass creative.
Yeah, remember, I think it was when there was this video where he was in a press conference, right? Yeah. And then what happened was, you know, he came out of nowhere and hit him over the head with a guitar. And then it was like...
I think that was basically them saying it's not going to work.
No, but...
kind of like the sign.
But here's the thing, they actually have vignettes and everything showing, okay, Hulk Hogan's coming to TNA, Hulk Hogan's coming to TNA. And then he didn't show. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, same kind of thing. Wasn't it kind of ironic? And then later on, he joined up, you know?
Yeah.
He was, owner or something.
There's something I think to say about that. I did want to bring up one little thing before we get to the Hogan years. 2008 was a pretty strong period for TNA. They did something magnificent that summer. I don't know if you remember it. It was the World X Cup. They brought
that
in.
That I remember, yes.
Yeah, that was perfect.
Brought in competitors from, like, Japan. We had, like, Speed Muscle. You had Doug Williams, Petey Williams. You had another. It was
like the Battle of the Countries.
Yeah. And it was just so well done. Victory Road that month, they started it out with like I think it was an Ultimate X match. I'm not too sure what it was, but that match lasted like 40 minutes. It was so good, and it just.
That's the one thing I could say about TNA. Their Ultimate X matches are always amazing.
They can be, but I just remember liking that particular one, and I'm just a sucker for like. Worldwide diversity and pro wrestling, and TNA was really the platform to see that go down. At least I think so. But I feel like now would probably be a good time to get to the Hogan era. Now it's pretty interesting because in retrospect, TNA is probably getting the biggest audience that it's ever gotten because if you look at it on the surface of it. Hey, Hogan and Bischoff, that's a pretty powerful duo. They're coming right to TNA, and they're bringing over people with them. They're bringing people like Ric Flair, Rob Van Dam, Mr. Anderson, the freaking most popular wrestler at the time, Jeff Hardy. I mean, he lit WWE up on fire in 2009, and the fact that he's coming to TNA in 2010, I mean, personally, I think the spotlight should have been on him upon his arrival, but they messed up something. He came up on a cage on the first. I mean, it just went so wrong. But an Impact, they moved Impact to Monday nights, which in the end turned to be a pretty boneheaded decision. But, I mean, you had to respect the idea of it, at least. And, you know, January 4th, 2010 is still going to be a night that's going to go down in pro wrestling history. You know, it's the first time that really TNA and WWE went head-to-head. Because even WWE had to build up their own Raw. Because if you remember, that was HBK and Bret Hart reuniting on television for the first time since the Screwjob. So they had to really build up their show to really combat TNA. And people were checking them out because, you know, Mr. Anderson was debuting, Jeff Hardy made an appearance, you know, AJ Styles, I think, was the champion with, like, heel Ric Flair as his manager. So they were doing some pretty interesting things. I think Al Snow was also a part of it. So, I mean, it was different. But I guess hardcore
Nick,
TNA
quick question. Is that when they would started the gut check?
No, that was 2012. Remember, TNA has done so many different things.
I lost track. That's why I asked.
It feels like it could have happened in one era when it was really part of another. Nah, Gutcheck was part of 2012. That was later on during the Hogan era. I'm talking about like early on in the Hogan Bischoff run.
Fortune and all them.
Yeah, that's this era. It became pretty dominated by stables. I mean, if anyone new to TNA, they probably weren't going to be surprised to see all these stables running about. Even in, like, 2007, 2008, you had the Main Event Mafia running around. You had
the original Main Event Mafia.
Yeah, the original one. I still like the idea of that gimmick with all the Main Event guys, you know, wanting their spot. You know, with dressed up in their little suits doing their beatdowns. I mean, even TNA had, like, Christian Cage, who really came into his own before he returned to WWE. It's funny because he was actually used better on TNA than WWE, but that's just my opinion.
And but he was in TNA for a few years.
Yeah, it's interesting that TNA found themselves in so many good positions, and creatively, they just managed to mess everything up. And, you know... many hardcore TNA fans were probably turned off by the idea of seeing like Hogan and Bischoff on their television. And keep in mind the fact that they switched the six-sided ring, which really And TNA was like the first American pro wrestling company to do that, and then they switched it to the four-sided ring. It really kind of gave the message that, hey, all right, maybe they don't want to be different. Maybe they just want to be like WWE. And a lot of people, you know, they compare TNA to WWE. You know, they call them WWE Lite because they're grabbing all these X-Division wrestlers and, you know, all these ex-WWE wrestlers. Sorry about that. And they're trying to make stars of them again. You know, it's tough. I mean, they didn't really use them to the best of their abilities.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think they made a mistake. They kind of messed up. They had the opportunities presented in front of them, but they totally screwed everything up. I mean, if you also think about this also, there was also a bit of a dispute in creative at that time, because from that period, from those transition years, there was actually this whole deal with the management, because at that time, Jeff Jarrett was the person that overseed everything. He was the owner. He was the end-all, be-all. He was the guy that you went to about everything concerning TNA. And then for a while, he had this dispute with a wrestler, now known as Kurt Angle, with, you know, something going on. There was a love triangle with him, Kurt Angle, and with Cameron Angle.
I kind of like that storyline, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Some of their matches are actually really good.
Yeah, I mean,
that just the true fact it was a real life storyline too.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of messed up that, you know, it was a real life thing, and they were like, you know, it happened behind closed doors, and, you know, things happened, but then later on they said, all right, let's just put this on TV and see how it goes. And it was pretty
genius. Here's a question for both of you guys. Since all three of us are hardcore wrestling fans, don't you like some of the real-life storylines brought into the show?
Hell yeah. I mean, look at Matt Hardy and, like, Edge and Kane and all that, you know? I mean, with Matt Hardy, Edge, and Lita, perfect rivalry. There was something real-life going on, and it really happened. Recently with, well, actually, we can't talk recently, but with the CM Punk.
Rock and Cena,
CM Punk, and WWE management, same kind of deal. It's always been, you know, a real life thing that divulged into it. But I think with TNA, the problem was in those transition years, there was chaos behind closed doors, and when there's chaos with the management, the talent suffer, or the program suffers as a whole. And I think after a while, they kind of realized that and said, all right, let's fix this, and then let's move on. And then what ended up happening was Jeff Jarrett had to leave the company. And then, you know, it was fully Dixie Carter. Well, let me, I don't know if you guys know this too, but remember when Dixie Carter used to come out there and make an announcement? She made it like it was a big deal, but nothing really happened. It was like, oh my God, we have the biggest lineup ever.
Oh, yeah, like when they signed a big MMA fighter.
Oh my.
Ended up being Tito Ortiz.
Oh my God. And Rampage Jackson coming in too. That was
to promote their fight that sucked ass.
Pac-Man Jones.
It was stupid. It was just like,
you know, Pac-Man Jones, like Nick said. Then yep. They had the Jersey Shore people come in.
Oh my God! When they had what's his name?
Ronnie.
Ronnie come in and all that stuff, and you know, it was kind of stupid. It was like, you know, you guys have this all just, you know, this cheap stuff that to promote to try to get into the mainstream media and, you know, get into it. When you guys organically did it, I mean, you know, you guys didn't even need to do anything. You just put out wrestling. And people watched, and people follow the product. So, you know, why would you guys just degrade yourselves like that? WWE, that's something that WWE would kind of do. That's something that the name who I can't say, whose name I can't speak of, would do. Of course, his, you know, his big crony boss, Vince, would probably do, which would be, you know, bringing in celebrities and, you know, making it into a big deal of, oh, let's get more mainstream people. Come on, man, it's not gonna work. And I think that's kind of really what into it. You know, you name it. Sting, they had you know, Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, you know, you can name pretty much everybody that switched over from WWE to TNA. Yet after a while it kind of got stale, and then everybody started leaving. And then, you know, of course, that's, you know, that's kind of how everything went then. The talent started leaving, and then the people started leaving too. And then what ended up happening was, of course, TNA had to switch from going from Monday nights back to Tuesdays, and then they went from Tuesdays to Wednesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays. They kept having this whole thing where they kept switching throughout the whole week, and that came to a point where pretty much Spike said, you know what, fuck you, get the fuck off our network. And then
where did they go what ended up
happening
that?
Was they kind of lost their... Well, I think after that, they had to go to... I think they were on the Fight Network. And then they reached an agreement, I think, with Destination America.
And now Pop.
And then, yeah. First it was Destination America. And then Destination America had ROH on there, which conflicted with TNA. And TNA didn't like that. And then they kind of said, all right, let's part ways. And then, of course, now they got this deal with Pop.
And since they went to Pop, their reviews have been amazing.
Well, actually, a little bit of clarification about their time on Destination America. 2015 was really just a year of maybe up and downs for TNA. You had so many people leaving the company, and it just felt like, all right, maybe TNA might actually be going away, you know? It kind of felt like, all right, maybe this isn't going to be around much longer. You know, it kind of felt like maybe the plug was going to be pulled on it. And, you know, that really happened once, you know, TNA didn't have a place to air Impact. I mean, it's interesting because between the middle of 2013 towards, like, the summer of 2014, I actually stopped watching TNA. I didn't watch a single bit of it until my brother bought me a ticket to the Hammerstein Ballroom for an Impact taping. And this was, like, during their, like, ECW 2.0, like, Dixieland storyline where, like, Dixie Carter ends up going through a table. And you had, like, last...
Oh, that's when Bully Ray was on a mission, right?
I just said sandwich. Wow, I'm hungry. He was, like, the heel champion. I mean, it was actually... TNA was actually pretty good at that time. Actually, maybe even bordering on really good. And it was just amazing, like, you know, how something like that, you know, couldn't find a TV deal. So going into 2015 with all these people leaving, you know, kind of felt like, oh, all right, maybe they won't get back on TV. And then suddenly they announced, like, they're on Destination America.
Nick, and quick question for you.
Yeah.
The show that you went to, is that when he actually put her through the table or no?
Yes. It was like around if you ever been to a TNA taping schedule?
I haven't.
A TNA taping. They pretty much tape a whole bunch of random segments.
Don't they do like four shows in a night?
Yeah, sort of in chronological order, and they'll have a lot of matches, you know, that will go down the way you expect them to. But if you watch the show, you know, while you're actually there and what it really ends up on TV, they could be switched around a lot. They just go into like whatever fits the flow of the show a lot better. But I kind of like that approach. The live atmosphere in New York City for a TNA show was actually pretty electric, and that crowd went crazy when Dixie went through the table. That was probably one of my favorite live moments. Honestly, maybe even as far as like
remember how we brought up the bad celebrity cameos?
Yeah,
I'm watching the Fight Network, and it's showing Ronnie from Jersey Shore versus Robbie E.
Yeah, again, this is TNA, so there's a reason LOL team.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, that kind of brought, because, you know, there was this whole thing with the Jersey Shore, and I mean, it's kind of like, you know, at that time, that was a thing. Like, you had South Park do their thing with the Jersey Shore, where, you know, Snooki was jumping. Snooki wants smush smush. That was hilarious. I mean, that was all just, you know, that was all just mainstream. At that time, Jersey Shore was rolling. Jersey Shore was like the thing. And now, you know, after they're riding that wave, it's kind of like, okay, you guys just totally sold out. And I think that was a mindset of most of the fans at that time, that they really sold out. But I mean, to get like what I was, you know, same thing. What I was saying, like with the, you know, the tension between all the management. It's the same kind of thing with the networks. If you have this tension with the networks and, you know, the execs and everything, how's that gonna affect your programming? I mean, of course, your fans are gonna, you know, they're not gonna know where you guys are on, so they're gonna be confused. And then your potential fans are gonna be like, well, where can I find you if, you know, you guys have a problem with this network, you know? So it's kind of like it. I mean, the reason I think they went down so much is because of this confusion of, okay, where are they gonna be? Where is their, like, what's their plan, and how are they gonna do? And for that time, it was kind of unknown. It was like, okay, we don't know yet what's gonna happen. But I mean, speaking of, you know, so after, I'd say what, this is, we're talking about still the downfall of TNA, right?
We're so, like the mid-2010s now.
Well, we pretty much did, I think. 2011, they had Victory Road 2011. Jeff Hardy versus Sting. Of course, there was that whole deal where, you know, where Sting was, you know, he came out, he did his thing, and then Jeff Hardy's coming out, he's like, you know, he's, I don't know, high, drunk, whatever. Something's going on with him.
Oh, the 32-second match.
Yep. And then with
that was like a horrible segment.
And I think that's where it started. There was some there was some tension between not only the management but with the, you know, not like, you know, the people running the show, but also with some of the people too, because if you really think about it, many of the talent, they were very dissatisfied. Ric Flair, of course, he left because, you know, there was some issue with contracts and, you know, getting in contact with people and this and that, whatever. So it's kind of messed up, you know, that, you know, that had to happen. But like with Jeff Hardy, he had drug troubles, and TNA didn't really, you know, they didn't really do anything until afterwards. And then, you know, it's kind of messed up to see that kind of, you know, thing happen on live TV, nonetheless. But what about 2012? When I think it was, this is when what was it? Well, 2012, 2013, that was pretty much their downfall. I know AJ tried to come back every now and then, and then what'd you call it? I think Chris Sabin came in also. Do you guys remember that period where they had former X Division stars, like former people that made their name in X Division, become world champion? This is like, I think, 2013, 2014. Now, Nick?
What was that?
Do you remember that period where they had, you know, former, like, this is like 2013, 2014, I guess, where they had the former, like, they brought in X-Division stars, right? Former X-Division stars, and they made them into champions. Like, for example, what was it? Chris Sabin, he came in, he won the world title. Who else? AJ Styles, of course, he came in, he won the world title. You remember that?
Yes, sort of. I mean,
Well, you say you didn't watch from 2013, 2014, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But I do remember. I do remember Sabin reigning as champion, not being that memorable. It was kind of confusing. I guess in terms of like the recent TNA years, one of my favorite moments had to be Austin Aries beating, you know, Bobby Roode for the world title, which ended his 9-month reign, which was, I think he was the longest reigning TNA champion at that time.
Yep. Yep.
And that really kind of helped Austin Aries become a star. But they
also Rude too.
Yeah, they took a belt off him, you know, not too long after that, and then he became a heel, and, you know, it was just so weird. I don't know how they messed that up.
It's true. I mean, well, I think they had a conflict between building their own stars and bringing in new stars. And I think that was where it started. They started developing new stars. Because if you remember from that time, they brought in talent that are big now, these days. If you think about it, that time, Derek Bateman, Ethan Carter, he came in. They were billing him as, I think, Dixie Carter's
nephew
or something. Yeah, nephew. And then, what was it? He started having this whole push. At first, it was kind of like, oh, okay, they're making a heel. It was like, all right, whatever. And then after a while, you kind of looked at it and said, this guy has some talent. He could be the next Rock. Matter of fact, he could be the Rock of TNA, if anything. But, I mean, if you look at his stigma, like his whole his effect, they really did a good job of that. What do you guys feel about like them bringing in old WWE talent and making them into new stars? Like, for example, with, of course, we could have Aaron Rex. We could have, who else?
Drew
Galloway, Tyrus. Bobby. Yep. Lashley also, yeah. But yeah, like, what are you guys' thoughts on that? Like recently they started doing this trend where they brought in failed stars and they're starting to rebuild them.
I mean, it works in some aspects, and other times it really it doesn't. But I think it works best in cases where the people haven't been used to their full potential in other companies like WWE. Christian Cage was, I think, an early highlight of this because, as a singles guy, he got his push, he got his time, but nothing really materialized from it. In TNA, he was actually allowed to pretty much be himself, and he was able to spook catchphrases, and he got over on his own pretty nicely. Hell, even managed to get Tomko over, and, that never really happened in WWE. Another case of this would be, EC3, who was, I forget his NXT, Derek Bateman, which, yep. He sure flashed as a brilliance, but you never really got to see it. Once he became EC3 in TNA, you really got to see, how he was maybe one of the business's best heels when he was a heel. And maybe the most recent example of this would probably be Drew Galloway, who was at one point quoted as the chosen one in WWE.
Isn't he Vince's godson or something?
Yeah, and then he got saddled into 3MB, and he was a complete afterthought. Once he joined TNA, he was allowed to actually branch out, and sure, maybe stand it didn't up. Happen overnight, but now
I remember that the whole standoff for wrestling.
Yeah, now if you look at him on the roster right now, he's one of the top stars. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time, but once it happens, once that guy really makes a name for himself, bam, you got a top star for a few years now.
And then also going back to when Drew first came in, that's when they brought in the Wolves and MVP.
Yeah, I mean, with also, they had the Beatdown Clan. Well, if you even go a little further back with, what's their name? Aces and Eights. Look how much talent they had. It was chaotic, but overall, they developed some gems out of that.
They had like 35 members.
Yeah, it was chaotic, but then if you look at the big picture, they actually developed some stars out of that. What was it? Yeah, they had Bully Ray, of course, perfect heel, perfect champion. And D-Von. I think he was almost memorable. Yep, D-Von came out. Taz, I think he really, really kind of rejuvenated his career from being this commentator to being the actual, the front man or whatever and all that stuff. That was pretty good. We also saw Brooke Hogan, who, I hate to admit, became a star in TNA because, of course, she was like the sweetheart.
She was daddy's little girl, basically.
She was basically, Miss Elizabeth of, that whole deal right there. But it was kind of like, okay,
Then they also had two sons of legends. They had Wes Briscoe and Jared Bischoff.
Yep. I mean, it was kind of like, they're bringing in these new stars and doing something. Luke Gallows was also there doing his little stint, and then he went to Japan to do the Bullet Club.
He was Gallows.
Yep. Well, Doc Gallows, if you really understand, at that time, he was kind of, I was reading this thing. Actually, it wasn't reading. I was like hearing this thing where he was on the thing, Talk is Jericho. He was talking about how.
Did you say reading?
Yeah.
You know what else you could read?
Another plug. Come on, man.
Hey, it's been a while since we did one.
Well, we should do it in the end, too, don't we?
But nonetheless, you can also read stuff on ProWrestlingOpinion.com.
Indeed, yep. ProWrestlingOpinion, we always got to bring that in.
I just had to do a Josh Matthews right there.
Come on, man.
That was well done.
That was well done, indeed. But, with Doc Gallows, there was this kind of thing where he kind of said, I think it was in Talk is Jericho podcast, he said...
is that the one with Carl Anderson that just happened recently?
No, this is, I think, a little bit back. He did one, I think...
He just did one with Carl Anderson on Sam Roberts, which was really good.
Yeah. He was actually talking about how... Well, in this one... Yeah, I think this was, like, a while back. This is, like, I think a couple months ago. He was talking about how when he was in TNA, that was the point where he was, like... He got turned down by WWE. He had nowhere to go. He went to TNA, and he was like, I don't even think this thing is going to work. So at that point, he was about to quit. And then with that Aces and Eights thing, it kind of brought him back to relevancy. And then he went to, I think it was, then he started his journey to Japan. And then he became a big star there. And eventually
coming back here. But, I mean, what a success story right there. Like, TNA actually helped put guys back into some kind of relevancy. Because for that period, we kind of looked at it and said, oh, TNA, and then as a joke, like, ha, that's funny. Like, you know, they're not a real company.
Well, like you just said, it could help bring people to bigger things. It brought him to Japan, became a 3-time
IWGP.
Yeah. A 3-time tag team champ. It made him relevant again, and it brought WWE to be like, hey, let's bring him back, but with his partner.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, TNA is the factory that takes misfits and turn them into, you know, something big. And it's kind of like, you know, with, I mean, if you look even, you know, like ahead of time, Broken Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy. Let's talk about Final Deletion. I mean, Brother what do you know? Brother Nero and Broken Matt Hardy. Right. I mean, that thing is phenomenal. The way they did it, it was just, it rolled off.
My take on it, because Sal, if you do watch Lucha Underground, so you could probably understand a little bit of the tie-in to this.
Yeah, I think I know what you're gonna say.
Yeah, it pretty much captures that what I always like to describe as a cinematic element.
Yes, yes.
As far as like capturing like this whole unique universe in only a way that TNA possibly could, you know, but everything's so outlandish, but it all happens within its own little world that you could kind of separate yourself from the whole TNA, the rest of everything in TNA, just kind of entertain yourself with what's happening here. And plus, Matt Hardy's having a really awesome year. I mean, he was kind of fading into obscurity last year. And I was just like, oh, all right, maybe he's phasing out his final time with the company. And like 2016 turns, he has the double turn with EC3. He becomes like Big Money Matt, which in of itself was a brilliant heel turn. And I freaking love his character. It reminded me of like his ROH heel run, which he was pretty infamous for posting all these internet videos and all that. If you remember, he did like a cue card promo that like feelings. You know, that was pretty well done. So the Big Money character kind of derived from that side of him, and it was just so well done. And he just naturally feuded with his brother Jeff, and then after a few matches, you know, he was taken out so badly he became quote unquote broken. At first, you know, I wasn't too warm about the concept of the character. It seemed a little bit out there to really...
Me neither, yeah.
To really be neither. Something special. But once he worked out the kinks, I mean, that's one of pro wrestling's best villains right now. And,
yeah.
You know, all right, maybe I am a month behind on programming, but I'm sure Broken Matt Hardy is still a fixture in TNA TV right now. And I just love the way everything came together. Like, you know, Rebby goes from like not understanding him to now accepting this new side of him, and the whole feud with Jeff. I mean, the Final Deletion was so well done. And
I think that's the best things to happen in TNA in a long time.
And I love the idea that it was a match that happened outside of the Impact Zone. There was no crowds. It was just completely just them.
Was it in their yard, right, or something?
Yeah, I think it was in their backyard, and they shot like fireworks, and they had all these expensive cameras, and they had drones and guitars, and it was just so. And Senior Benjamin. It was just so outlandish and outrageous, but it worked because it was like buying itself into that idea that it's outlandish and outrageous. You know, they didn't pull any punches. They went all the way with how crazy things could get. And I just love the idea that Matt Hardy's character has gone through such transitions in this during the year that now Broken Matt Hardy has really become, I think, maybe his signature gimmick.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, it's with the Broken Matt Hardy gimmick, I think, in a way, for many years, we kind of, many fans kind of looked at Broken Matt Hardy. I mean, Matt Hardy in general and Jeff Hardy, if you look at the Hardy Boys together, they kind of look at, you know, who's bigger. And it's always been that Jeff has already been the one that's bigger because, you know, the management thinks he's good, whether he's in WWE or in TNA. He's got talent in the ring. The fans love him because, you know, whatever, the kids like him. But Matt, he kind of, like, fades into it, like, you know, the background because he's the older brother. He's the one that's always, you know, like, you know, that's under his brother and everything. And it's kind of interesting now that Matt Hardy, in a way, is more bigger than his brother will ever be now. Because with this whole, you know, with this whole broken Matt Hardy gimmick, it'll keep living on. And if they keep doing this, I hope they end up having a point where it's like, you know, it continues and he becomes an even bigger heel. But what I like most is what you're saying about that with the cinematic angles. They have all these cinematic angles where, you know, they develop this footage. They're not lazy like, you know, whoever's name, you know, KD's name, you know, I don't want to say his freaking name, who's lazy just likes to, you know, put out talent, like, content how it is. And
hey, instead of, can I say the name? Whatever,
no, don't say the name, man. Don't say it. Nope. But
you know what? I don't give a fuck. I'm going to say Kevin.
No, don't. Oh, my fucking God. No, you didn't say it.
That's why we don't have nice things.
Oh my God, I'm livid right now. I mean, I hate, like, that's what I'm saying with Kevin Dunn. It's the same thing. Since you brought it, fuck it, we'll just say it. But yeah, with Kevin Dunn, it's kind of like.
I do wonder though who was behind the whole New Day Wyatt's compound segment.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
That one might have been Triple H.
It might have been. But I think that was a surefire sign of like that internal question. Of, like, whenever you ask, like, a WWE guy, does management watch TNA? They'll give some bullshit answer, like, we don't watch whatever program, you know, is there. We really compete with, you know, with football or whatever. And it's true now. They kind of, yep.
I mean, Rich, what was that? TNA, I'm sure they taped it a few, maybe, weeks in advance. So maybe they couldn't have known WWE was going to do this thing at the time. But I love that they both aired within a week of each other.
I just find it funny that the final deletion happens and then magically you get the compound.
Yeah, that's true. And
I just find that funny. But they don't watch each other.
No, I think they do. I think there's someone in the management that actually watches it.
So you really think the companies pay someone to sit there and watch the other program?
Well, I don't think they pay them. I think they just follow whatever's on social media. Because if you look at that time, on social media, what was trending the most? Final deletion. And everybody was having all this, you know, there was this craze behind it. And I think it caught on to WWE, where WWE was like, okay, let's watch this. Let's see what they do. I think that's where they kind of said, all right, let's watch it. Because it's kind of like...
Compound happened.
Yeah, and then the compound happens, of course. But as far as whose idea it was, I mean,
I think it was Triple H.
I think it was Triple H. I think it was an attempt. I mean, it's pretty good. But, I mean, I hope they have more shit like that, you know, because it's kind of like we're in the era where you watch wrestling promos. It's kind of like it's low budget. It's stupid. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of retarded out of the way that they do it. But, I mean, there's no substance, right? You know, it's like, you know, there's something. They just talk or they do like a little funny thing, whatever. But there's no substance. There's nothing where we can actually, like, you know, we can latch onto. Like a casual viewer, they want to see something. They want to see the theatrics and then get hooked in. Like what Lucha's doing, they're doing a pretty good job of trying to do that, you know. Like Lucha, they have all this, you know, these old cameras and everything. You know, they have a different kind of view of how they produce it. And as a result, that's why it's so good, you know. But, I mean, with TNA, they kind of, I think that's where they got the inspiration from, Lucha, of course. Getting that, you know. Getting those ideas of, you know, okay, let's go out and do that. But
like, one thing no company could copy from TNA is the Ultimate X thing. No company could ever copy that.
Yep. Let's talk about the X Division.
Well, Lucha could probably do it because they have a lot of high flyers.
Yeah, Lucha. Well, I mean, we got the Cruiserweights, of course, WWE and WCW. And, like, you know, they had a Luchadors and everything. And then right now TNA has its X Division. With the X Division, I think that's what really built them, and it's also what's bringing them back now. Do you guys believe that?
To an extent, yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, there happens rejuvenation where they're trying to come back and bring in this new style back. Because if you really think about it, back then it was the first time we actually saw these kind of things where people were doing these spots and everything, you know? But now it's like, you know, now you kind of see it. It's kind of interesting now that they're trying to rejuvenate that, bring it back, and hopefully repackage it. But do you guys really feel that that TNA can use X Division as its backbone again to bring it back to prominence?
I know Nick is behind, but if you watch the past couple weeks, it has.
I still think that they have a lot of work to do. I think they still have to do a lot more to get back, because it's kind of like, what stars do they have right now for the X Division? They got Mandrews, got...
DJZ. Eddie Edwards, Trevor Lee, Everett.
Rockstar Spud. I mean, like, you know, these stars, they still have a lot of time to develop and do some stuff, but we'll just have to see what they do from there. But, you know, overall, I think it can happen, but if they can execute it properly, you know?
I think it's going to take, like you said, a little bit of time to actually develop what they could do, but I think that could be the backbone.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, nonetheless, we talked about, you know, the Asylum years, the NWA years. We talked about TNA, you know.
We do tag teams, we do factions out there, knockouts.
Mm-hmm. And overall, I mean, TNA is actually going on this path of coming back to prominence. We'll see if they can stay there or if they can go up, you know. But
at least they don't have that one person, that the WWE women's superstar that we can't talk about.
Well, I mean,
they don't have that.
Thank God they don't.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I don't want to say the name. We're trying to do a podcast where we don't bring up the name, man.
You know? I'm sorry for bringing up that name, though.
You shouldn't, man. No, that's cool. Just don't say it.
I'm just saying, I apologize for bringing up that name.
Eva!
No, the other one.
Which other one?
JD.
Who?
Kevin.
Oh, my God. Oh, he's a diva, too, now. I see.
Yeah.
You already said too much.
We already said too much, indeed.
I had to sing for Eva's debut on SmackDown.
Oh, you got it?
That ridiculously long narrated entrance. Oh, my God.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I think it's just...
Just wait, because you have a couple more weeks. It gets funnier.
No.
Sound knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, oh, my God. It's just, it gets more and more interesting. You'll see.
It gets more and more stupider, is what he actually meant.
Yep, that's what I meant. But, I mean, nonetheless, I think, you know, we pretty much talked everything about TNA. Is there anything else we're missing?
We even went a little off topic with the other company.
Yep. I mean, with TNA.
I think there's one more thing that we're missing.
What are we missing?
I talked about it, and Nick talked about it. You're the only one who hasn't talked about it yet.
What is it?
That website.
Oh, the website you mean, right? Let me talk about the story first, okay? So, I mean, like I was saying, I was bringing this up. I'm coming home from school. I'm running home. I'm just looking at my TV. I'm like, wow, there's nothing on TV. Shit. What do I do? So I just go outside. I'm looking on the internet. So then what I do is I go on Pro Wrestling Opinion. Nick's website. And I'm looking on there, and I'm like, okay, so, you know, what's relevant in wrestling these days? Let me see. So I look on there, and I'm like, okay, so they got Lucha. All right, I know what's going on with Lucha. They ended. I'm looking at, I'm looking at TNA. I'm like, all right, TNA is TNA. WWE is WWE. And I start seeing these other companies. I'm like, what? I never heard of this company before. I'm just like, how the hell, what the hell? I never heard of this company before. So it's kind of like, you know, I look on the website, and I see these different articles on different sites and everything. And guess what I see?
What?
I see things like ROH on there. I see PWS. I see AML on there. I see a whole bunch of different promotions that I never heard of.
West Coast, Western Connection.
Yep. And it's kind of interesting. I kind of read the stuff, and I'm like, wow, so maybe, you know, someday I might see these guys on WWE.
Sal, I have a question for you, though.
Yep.
Do you know who the writer is of that site?
I don't know. Can you tell me?
What's his name? I think it's Nick Lopez.
Nick Lopez, I think, right?
Oh my God. I think we're actually on the air with him.
Are we on the air with him?
I think so. I want.
Nick, you call there?
Yeah, watch call Nick.
Holy shit! It's Nick.
Yeah.
It's okay. Nick.
It's Nick. Oh my god. The COO, or who's a
the executive? He wants to go by.
Or he wants to go by the executive now. But Nick, what do you say now? Like, let's finish it right here. What would you prefer more, the executive or the COO?
I like the executive.
The executive. So there you have it, folks. Nick will now be known as the executive.
The executive, indeed. But and nonetheless.
And yep. Just like any true executive, when they're down, they're not out. I'm a little bit down. I'm a little bit behind. But I will get back to pro wrestling prominence. You'll see me back covering those live shows, because now everything is live nowadays.
Which is actually better.
Yep. But, I mean, nonetheless, yeah, we got, you got a lot of stuff to catch up on. There's WWE. There's also NXT coming up more.
Cruiserweight Classic.
Lucha Underground. The Cruiserweight Classic is wrapping up.
You can find all of my reviews of Season 2's Lucha Underground episodes all up on the site. I know they're coming back on September 7th, I think this next coming Wednesday. So if you haven't watched any of Lucha Underground Season 2, follow the site. I got everything up on there.
Sal, it's that time again.
It's that time, indeed. What's the tagline?
He mentioned the site. It's only tagline time.
Yeah, what's the tagline?
I think the writer should say it because he's live with us.
And indeed, I think he should say it because he got the better tagline now. Or the new updated tagline, right?
It's tagline time, Nick.
It's a great idea. Great idea. Well, yeah. Reading is fundamental. Reading about pro wrestling puts you over.
And that's
Rich, you taking notes?
And that's tagline time, presented by the RSN Wrestling Podcast.
Indeed, indeed. We got to make a segment like this every single time we do a podcast. But nonetheless, this is the RSN Wrestling Podcast. You can follow us on YouTube, also on our other social media platforms. We're on Facebook. Also, be sure to like Pro Wrestling Opinion, their Facebook page. Also, be sure to check us out also on SoundCloud. We have a SoundCloud page where we do audio podcasts. There's a full audio podcast. It's for those days where you want to, you know, you're sitting on a train or on a bus, you're busy as hell, and you're sitting like, oh my, you're bored as hell. You're looking at, you know, you're looking around, you're like, damn, I'm bored as hell. What do I do? You can just open up the SoundCloud app, boom, you can just listen to your things. Do whatever the hell you want. You want to work out on it, you know, you can listen to our podcasts, what we're doing, everything, all that stuff. Also, be sure to check out Pro Wrestling Opinion. They got the site up, like Nick said, Nick, the executive now, as he wants to say. As, you know, the different reviews, if you see from there, if, you know, there's anything more, we'll let you guys know. This is the mastermind. I'm with...
This is the big guy, Rich.
And now the executive.
And Nick Lopez. Nick Lopez.
This is RSN Wrestling Podcast. We'll see you guys out.
See you guys.